You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Regina Frank. Regina, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on this program. It's a wonderful collection of artists that you're having. I've been browsing it quite a bit, and I'm really very happy to be part of it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's nice of you to say. Let's talk about what you're working on now. I know a current project is The Art is Present, but let's talk about what it is that you're working on and most involved with at this point.
One of my most recent performances that I'm performing for the last 2 years is a project called Island. My work uses the dress as a vehicle of communication, and the dress to address issues, to address specific issues that come close to my skin, that touch me, that worry me, that move me. And so one of the most recent projects was very concerned with the environment. And so I decided to make a dress called Island, which is an island made from all different kinds of environmental issues and problems that are on this earth. And I composed the island like a photo collage, featuring flooded areas and hurricanes and desertification and earthquake areas, volcanoes. And all of these are as if they were in the direct neighborhood of each other, but also complementary, meaning that on one side you have the flooded areas and on the other side you have the desertificated areas. And then once you fold it, basically the two areas, the flooded and the desertificated areas, are coming together and thus symbolically inspire each other, sort of based on this idea of particle physics. If you basically have an A, point A, and a point B, and a certain distance, you need a certain amount of time to travel from A to B. But if you follow the map, basically A and B are coming directly on top of each other. They are right next to each other. And this is sort of the same idea. Flooded and deserts are sort of inspiring each other.
And that way, I want you to go on to the next one, but before you do, and that's a sculpture as well as an installation. How will that actually be viewed, what you were just talking about?
Well, it's a large scale dress. It's also a sculpture that is basically almost like a garden where you see the different areas, but there is also a dress that I can fold up. And with this dress, I have been performing in the past couple of years. I went to Venice with it during the Biennale, during the Venice Biennale. Then I went to China with it, to Italy, to France during the SET Festival, to Portugal, to Germany, to Kassel during Documenta. In Finland, I was with it. And every time I do this performance, I make a film from it. And I make one very, very, very slow movement. So you can hardly discern what the movement is. But in a time-lapse format, you basically see me moving in real time, or in a normal speed, a bit maybe a bit slow, but in a normal speed. But the rest, the background, is sort of flying. Ships are landing and going away within seconds, and airplanes are just dashing over, and people are sort of choo, 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 choo. You know, there is this complete contrast between my movement is sort of normal, and the rest, it's in the background and it's normal, and that is then in the time lapse format, dashingly fast. And for me, this is sort of the effect that we have on the environment, you know, because When we move, we are not really aware of what our movement causes. But as soon as we speed up and look forward, then we can see the consequences of our action within the environment. So that's the whole idea of this performance.
Which is really an activist stance, it sounds to me, because ideally you want to see change in the way we're perceiving our lives and time itself. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sort of links to one of my first performances at the New Museum of Contemporary Art in New York. I don't know if you were one of the people who saw it live in 1993 even already, when I did this performance where I was working for 28 days in the window of the new museum on Broadway, right around the corners were the sweatshops with the Chinese seamstresses working for 20 cents an hour. And I was sitting in the window working for $17.10 in the beginning for an average hourly wage of Norway. And then every day going a bit further down for a different country's hourly wage of a textile worker until I arrived at 20 cents per hour, you know, for Indonesia, which was the lowest salary I got. And all these salaries were published in the Dow Jones stock market. And so you could see my stock falling, basically. And I was working every day also a little bit slower according to my salary. And until the end, when I made a stitch, maybe in 10 minutes it would take me to thread a pearl or something like that in this super, super slow motion. And on that performance installation, I also bought flowers and bread every day to experience my hourly wage. And so in the beginning, I had all these flower bouquets and this delicious breads. And then in the end, I couldn't even afford a slice of bread and leave it alone a flower to get food for the soul and for the body symbolically. So it's very related to these very first performances that also resulted in installations. I mean, that piece got auctioned off at Christie's, and the proceeds went half to the museum, to the New Museum of Contemporary Art, and half to the Chinese Staff and Workers Association. So it was very important for me at the time to raise awareness for the textile industry and why T-shirts are as cheap as they can be and why women's labor, I mean, technically textile work, is also a lot slave labor, and why we are supporting this kind of system by buying and buying and buying and so on.
Right, which is really supporting slave labor, of course.
Yes.
And when that exhibit was sold, how does that get sold? Is that parts of it? I mean, it's a performance, an installation. How does the whole thing get sold, as you say it did?
Well, as you know, most of my work has an very sculptural installation part. So for me, the whole reason why I started with this project, The Artist is Present, 25 years ago, was that there was an artist that was present for some time. But then I also wanted to miss me. In my book, The Artist is Present, I wrote, the real presence is an absent one. For me, the theory was really that there is at some point an artist, and then the artist is leaving, and what is remaining is an installation reminding of the artist's presence and of that moment where you encountered the artist. And a lot of people were really surprised that I actually was in the installation for so long, like 6 years in Hermes Mistress, you know, from 1994 until 1999, I was in the museum exhibit for 3 weeks at a time, or in the Exit Art exhibition, I was for 6 weeks. At MoCA, I was only for 1 week. But I was sitting there for Hermes Mistress, and I was collecting information from the internet when the internet was really small, 1993, you know. You didn't even have a search engine, a proper search engine yet. And I was like finding this text and that text, and I was sort of materializing the information very slowly into my huge round red silk gown, and sort of embroidering myself with what I got to know. And I found incredible information. And the more I was searching, the longer the project was going on. Also, the smaller the space of my dress got. Like in the beginning, I had all these big round circles around the hem. And then as the text was spiraling inward, you know, there was almost nothing anymore. There was very little space. And so I ended with the word limitation, which is basically symbolic also for the fact that I could not end at the center of my body, which was the original concept. All of this I've written down in my book, The Artist is Present, which came out in 1999. And at the moment, I'm working on a second phase, which basically changes The Artist is Present into The Art is Present, because also a famous colleague of mine used my title, very much to my surprise, because she knew my work. And we discussed it many times, and she also published some of my pieces in her books. And it's Marina who used this title for her exhibition at MoMA. And so it's so connected to her that it forced me to go a bit further and a bit deeper. And I took that as a gift to move on and to develop into The Art is Present, which is basically a focus on the art and not so much on the artist and on the installation that comes out. And yes, the pieces get sold, and some of them are in my private collection, and then I rent them. There is a piece in the permanent collection of the San Diego Museum of Art, and which got donated by Paulo Coelho, the writer. There are installations, and the videos of the performances are part of it. And it's a whole package. It's a computer program. It's a video with the performance, the dress, and often a sculpture, which is in the San Diego Museum of Art piece. It's a plaster replica of my body. And in the new projects, some of them in the island project, it can be in bronze or in a 3D printed material. There are different ways for me. But the sculpture is really important for me. It's an important part of the whole process. I love...
So let's talk about that a little bit. I know that, you know, people hearing this will go to the website, theartispresent.com, and see a lot of the images. But go on with what you're saying, because now the art is taking a different role. That's really a decisive move away from the artist is present. Yet you still appear in a lot of these images, like you're saying, as a plaster cast or part of the map as a dress. But I think you were just starting to say, before I interrupted you, you're talking about the sculptural element of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, casting, molding, sculpting is very, very important part of the process, and I really enjoy that. When I did the sculpture for San Diego Museum of Art, I was invited to have a takeoff of the Cotan painting, And so I started to make these, cast these fruits and vegetables from with plaster. And I used alginate, and I got really such a kick out of the seams of the when you make the molds, you know, the seams that the molds have, and the alginate, the detail that you can reach. And I, the first time I got to know about it is in Japan, and they casted my hand when I was working with the Wacol Art Center. And they took me to different factories, and one of them was one of those factories where they make these models from famous models. And then I worked with it continuously, and but also experiment with it and threw threads in it and different feathers. And so the surface was in a different way, and you can see that in the fruits and vegetables that I casted for that particular sculpture, Whiteness in Decay. It's just a completely different world. And I love to sew. I make all my dresses myself. They are all custom-made, handmade by me. I have an old machine that I'm using for 30 years. I'm a real dressmaker. I know how to do all these things. And I really enjoy that process. This is, for me, a preparation for the performance. It's very important part of the process. I usually use also a different material for every dress, like silk for me stands for metamorphosis, and cotton stands for me for a different kind of process, linen for the growth, and so you have also this different material philosophy. I'm sorry,
I wanted to hear that. I was just going to ask that in the context of performance, and I know, you know, we mentioned Marina, and then there's people like Tetsching Hase and so many others that have done kind of durational performances of different kinds. Yours seems to occupy a very distinct area in terms of content, and it isn't simply about form or the duration of it happening. There's a direct social context and commentary happening with all this that people often react to. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. And that's also why I had a tendency in the last couple of years to go more out of the museum into public space, to not have that security frame of the museum anymore, and to just go back out there and sort of interact with real people. I mean, I love, don't get me wrong, I really love to work with museums because they are super professional. They give you a fantastic platform, and there is a lot of discussion going on. But that is also very fruitful and very inspiring, of course, when people that are interested in art see your work. But for me also, I love it when I'm just out there in public, you know, with real people that have nothing to do with art, and they are just confronted with these issues. And then the dress becomes a vehicle of discussion, and it becomes a completely different, it becomes a sort of, yeah, I mean, in the island case, it's an island, and people start to interact, and people sit in front of it, and they watch me, and they get into the slow mode maybe as well, and or they dance behind me or whatever, you know. But there is this real kind of, something that's happening that doesn't happen necessarily in the museum in such a way when you can control almost everything.
Right.
I mean.
And in this context, are you also, I mean, you've been traveling, exhibiting all over the world extensively, it seems, for quite a while. Are you also teaching or doing other work, or are you able to only focus on your work, on your artwork?
Well, I'm actually focusing mostly on my work. I don't know how I always manage, but one secret of it is, or one rule for me is to live on a very low budget. For me, freedom is when I can sleep under a bridge as well as in a presidential suite, which I have also. In San Diego, they sponsored a presidential suite, but there were also times when I literally was homeless and I was with my little dress somewhere and I was using it as a tent and slept underneath. And for me, that's freedom, you know. Here I live in a very simple place. I don't need much money, and that's very important for me. I don't care so much about luxury. I care more that I can really survive well. But there are also ongoing projects that I do for 21 years is the longest. There are unpublished performances, and there are a way to sustain myself, but also a way to interact with people. It's sort of written scripts, and they're really a very interesting interaction with people, opening up also discussions. And there is this fascination for me to just work and do my work. And though also I'm preparing a solo exhibition for my hometown, I mean, where I was born, in Meskirch, and the couple...
And where were you born? Where were you born?
In Germany, in a little town called Meskirch. It's maybe known to some philosophers, or to philosophers it's usually known because Martin Heidegger was born there. And this little town, they have a castle, and they have a huge exhibition space in that castle. And I get a solo exhibition there by the end of the year. And this is something really nice that I'm looking forward to. It's opening on the 22nd of November, so 22/11 at 11 o'clock. It will feature three older ones from the glassbead game that I did for the Olympic Games in Atlanta that is still in my personal collection, and Hermes Mistress, which I did all around the world. It's sort of like the island dress that also is traveling for years now. And then there will be Island as an installation piece. And one more surprise, and there will be films about all these performances. But mainly they want to feature my drawings. I've been drawing for the last 30 years or more, and the drawings from since the 80s, they are all going to be there. A really comprehensive sort of survey, mainly about the two-dimensional work that I've done. And parallel to this, there will be a palimpsest poetry exhibition here in where I currently reside. It's close to the middle of nowhere, Pedacera. It's an extremely beautiful place in Portugal. And so that's going to be funny, the two exhibitions at the site, completing each other. And I think that's also a new start for me. I've always, the last bigger survey I did in the end of the 90s, in 99 at Kampnagel in Hamburg. So I'm really excited about that. I'm looking forward to working with that.
That sounds very exciting. I look forward to hearing and seeing that as well. You're living in Portugal now, is that correct?
Yes, half-half. I also live in Germany still, but it's more and more Portugal at the moment. I love this country. This is a great country. I think if I was a child, I would certainly choose to live in Portugal because the Portuguese are extremely loving with children. But also, I think for adults, it has a lot to offer. You know, it's more down to earth, and it's not so much about what you do, but who you are in terms of your spiritual depth, your focus, your personality, rather than your success. And so it's a very nice country, I think. To live here is quite a privilege, I feel. Completely different lesson in my life after New York and Boston and Tokyo and India, you know. Different way of life.
Regina, in closing, is there anything else you'd like to say that I haven't brought up?
Let me just mention that I also hope that people can make this move towards the art as present again a little bit more. I mean, for me to drop the EIST, the IST, the IST of the artist, was really a big step in terms of being less selfish, less more about the work rather than about the personality. And I think there is a big focus at the moment on the artist rather than on the work that is being created. And I find that a bit of a pity because it leads to so much ego confusion and, you know.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I know that, you know, I'm an artist and I've had relationships with other artists, and there is often, it's often difficult for artists to, you know, to live together. It's on a personal aside, although this is in the interview, I have a collaborative with my wife, and I think that's another way also of putting the art forward, to develop a new name and not have it be the name of one of the people in the collaborative. Then the work becomes about something other than the ego of one of the artists.
Exactly. And I took it always as a great compliment that people knew my work, but not so much my name. You know, I mean, people, when I would say Regina Frank, people wouldn't really connect that to a particular kind of work. But when they saw the image of a work, they were like, of course I know that. Of course I have seen that. I remember that. And I always was very happy about that because it proved me to be on the right track, you know, with the work being remembered, and it spoke to their soul rather than, then it's nice also to be remembered, but it's not that important. I mean,
It's nice for the work to be remembered as opposed to, it's nice for the artist to be remembered too, but you want the work to continue to.
Exactly. And I think also to remember that moment of inspiration, you know, I mean, for me, the artist is present was a moment that was when that came to me when I was working in the 80, 89, 90s, it was always this moment, wow, this is, it's so exciting. And I think every artist, in fact, I think every kid, also every person has had that in their life, that the artist was present, that they did something that they were really surprised at, that they were really, oh, wow, I did that, you know. And then this I did that, it ruins it a little bit, because it's that combination, it's that moment when that thing was created through your body. That's important. And then the claiming of it is nice, but it's almost like the joy then is over, because then it starts to be, again, the separation of, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That makes sense.
I think, yeah.
No, sorry. Go on. That's okay.
No, I think a lot of work is created in that dialogue, in that moment, you know. Also, a lot of work is created in the moment when the viewer sees it and interacts with it and falls basically in love with it. I mean, the first art piece that I fell in love with was Vermeer. And I just remember that magic moment when I was standing in front of that, and I thought, I want to do things like that. I want to paint like Vermeer. I thought that was my way, you know. Mm. And then I learned first how to paint, and then I realized, oh, well, that's not really it nowadays. But I still feel this desire, you know, and I'm still envy a little bit of somebody like Vermeer, who could express it all in one little painting, and that painting is traveling around the world, and he doesn't need to be there, although his spirit, of course, certainly is. You understand me?
That's right. Yes, of course, of course. Regina, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.